everyone. This is Authors on the Air, and I'm your host, Pam Stack. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. You have often heard me talk about the importance of great cover art and great titles for books. My guest today wrote a book, and when I saw the title, I knew I had to read it. The book is called 1,000 Paper Birds. I just love that title. It's unlike anything I'd ever read and seen. Author Tori Udall is with me today. She's calling in from the UK. Tori Udall, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thanks for being with me.
Thank you very much for having me, Pam.
You know, I'm fascinated by your creative self. I read what little you have of your bio, but you were a theater and film major, and you co-founded a dance and theater company, and you directed it, and you were writing, and you're performing. What else did you do? Because it seems to me something very big happened to you at the National Theater.
Well, I think I started off as a reader. I just loved reading as a child. The Secret Garden and Swallows and Amazons, and read ballet shoes, and that was the thing that made me want to be a dancer. So that's what I started off doing. And then as I grew into my teens, I started getting into acting and into theatre directing. And when we were about 18, a group of us devised a show and ended up winning a competition, and the prize was to perform at the Olivier stage at the National Theatre just for one night. But at the age of 18, that was incredibly exciting. So we did that, and then it was very much expected that I would become a director. But there was something nagging at me that I wanted to create my own stories. However much I enjoyed directing, I didn't want to just interpret other people's stories, but create my own. So that's when I set up a dance theatre company, and we devised the pieces, and we wrote text for the shows, and we danced in them. And there was one show I remember very particularly. We were dancing at Sadler's Wells and had just done this very painful dance solo on Points. And I was in the wings, catching my breath. And there was some text that I'd written that was being just said on a voiceover on a black stage. And the audience were laughing at the right moment, and they were holding their breath at the right moment. And it was just a really clear thought, that's what I want to do. I want to write. So I packed up my ballet shoes and started writing seriously, and wrote my first novel in my 20s.
Was 1,000 Paper Birds your first novel or your first published novel?
It was my first published novel, so I wrote two novels before that. And they had a chance of getting there. I got very close to getting published, but didn't quite make it with those two.
Do you still have those books in the bottom drawer of your desk?
I very much do. In fact, I'm working now on one of them again, completely revamping it and trying to see what I was trying to say all those years ago.
Good for you. I think that's great. There, a lot of wisdom comes with just writing and writing and writing, doesn't it? I think probably as a creative person, you know that rejection is part of the learning process. Isn't that so?
Very, very much so. But the thing was, I tried to actually stop writing after my first book was rejected. I was like, I'm not going to write again. This is so painful. And I couldn't actually stop writing. I carried on filling notebooks and notebooks, and then realized I had two novels inside them, and went back to work.
I have to just take a moment to say that I love looking at your website, which for listeners is www.tor.com, particularly because you and I are enamored of the same blue-eyed actor. As a matter of fact, that would be Paul Newman, and he is on every page in your website, which just thrills me to no end. And I love that he's part of your inspiration, because I will take a little side story to tell you, and I'm sure you'll appreciate this. In the United States, our postal stamps occasionally have actors or musicians or other creative people on there, as well as other designs and everything. And there was a limited edition issue of Paul Newman stamps. And a friend of mine got me a sheet of those stamps. And I thought, oh, Lord, I want to lick the front and the back, you know. But instead, I put that sheet of stamps in a frame, and that frame sits in front of my family pictures.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And they're no, it's a collector's item now. They no longer make those. They were a limited edition. But back to you.
Well, whenever I'm writing a book, I put all the pictures up on my wall. So my writing room is just covered in pictures of Kew Gardens and of the characters. So I had Paul Newman up everywhere. And I was so sad when I had to start working on the second book and take Paul down. That was a hard moment.
Oh, my gosh. I think he should be up there all the time. Let's talk about 1,000 Paper Birds. Will you tell listeners about this book, please?
Well, it's a modern-day story, and it's all set in the Botanical Gardens in Kew. It's about love and loss, creativity, nature, and origami. It starts with Jonah, who's a music teacher, and he's grieving the death of his wife, Audrey. He's heartbroken. He's reading at the end of what he thought was an apparently perfect marriage. And over the course of a year, he meets four people. There's gardener Harry, who's tending to the endangered plants in Kew. Nature-loving Millie, who loves the gardens with a child's breathless wonder, and brittle, artistic Chloe, who seeks comfort in origami. And all of them are figuring out their place in this world without Audrey. And then we discover Audrey's diary, and we begin to find out how these five lives are connected. Why is Millie a child wandering unaccompanied around the garden? Who is Harry Barclay, and how and why did Audrey die? And there's a rather large twist towards the end where the truth of that is discovered. For me, it's quite a joyful novel. It's really a love letter to Kew Gardens and a love letter to life. And it's about the transformative power of nature. You know, I talked earlier about loving the secret garden when I was a child. And I really believe
yes.
you know, if we enter a garden and if we let it into our hearts, we can leave changed.
I so believe that. I had the honor of visiting Kew when I was in London one year or in England one year.
Wonderful.
Do you spend a lot of time there?
Yes, I spent a lot of time there. I had a little flat fairly near Kew Gardens. It was very tiny, almost like a bedsit. And so I would go and write in the gardens. I was actually working on another project, but Kew just seduced me, and so I ended up writing this novel. But yeah, I'd go there all the time to write. There was a particular bench by the lake that I would work, and that then became Audrey's bench in the novel. And quite often when I got stuck on scenes, I'd go to a particular location because each character resonates with a different part of the garden. So that was really useful
yes.
for me.
Do you take your children to Kew Gardens?
I do. They love it, but they love the playground more than all the natural bits. So I sometimes get a bit frustrated. I'm like, I just want to go in the bluebells. And they're like, I want to go down the slide again. but yeah,
they're young.
They love it.
They're young. They'll appreciate it later. It's being in that type of an environment is very good for the soul. Kew Gardens almost becomes a character in your book.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's got such a strong atmosphere, that place. You know, people have been going there for hundreds of years, and you can feel it in the air that there's just... I mean, one of the interesting things about having written the book is I get messages every day from people who say how much it's moved them, and quite often they have some relationship to the gardens themselves, and that's been really wonderful to hear everyone's personal stories about what this garden means to them.
Tell me about writing. How in the world did you find these characters?
It started off with me sitting on the bench writing other things and being really aware that the bench I was sitting on was a commemorative bench for someone who had died. And I became fascinated by this rub of death and life in the garden, because the garden itself is so vital and so full of life. And I started wondering what stories these benches could tell. And at the same time, I was working in an office doing this really boring job of just folding paper into three because it was this distance learning thing and having to send stuff off to people. I thought the only way I could get through all this folding is to really get into the folding. And so I started looking at origami and found this wonderful interview with this origami master who said he'd spent his entire life trying to express with paper the joy of life or the last thought before a man dies. So I started kind of combining that together. And the characters kind of evolved from that. I knew I wanted to write about unrequited love, for instance. Oh, and then Harry Barclay came because I was living in this bedsit, which was a big building with lots of different flats in. And posts kept coming for Harry Barclay, and he didn't live there. So in my notebooks would be this question, who is Harry Barclay? And that became one of the central questions of the book. So, yeah, they all kind of came together in a strange way, really.
How interesting. Can you visualize your characters really well? Do you know exactly who they are when you close your eyes and think about your characters?
Now I do. Some of them, not immediately. The men took a lot more work than the women did. But I started off with Modigliani portraits. I was looking at these beautiful portraits and not necessarily saying that the characters look exactly like them, but it might be just the way they hold their shoulders or the way they're looking. So I took that as my first inspiration and then stared at Paul Newman for quite a long time and went from there. But it was interesting. I had to make some changes for translated copies because some things wouldn't translate into different languages. And I was surprised at how easy it was to jump back in and write a new scene of dialogue that those characters are still very much with me. And whenever I go to queue, I kind of spot them in the corner of my eye.
How interesting. That's fascinating to me. Are you a note taker? When you sat in the garden, did you make notes before you started your book? Did you only go when you were writing, or did you go just to take it all in?
Both. I definitely started off just going there just to take it all in, and I saw how the garden would support me in times when I needed it. But I am a note taker. I do fill up a lot of notebooks, so that's happening at the same time. I mean, I must have looked mad at times, you know, in the winter with my woolly hat on and my coat and my gloves sitting on a bench scribbling away, but I enjoyed it tremendously.
Did you do most of your writing at Q?
Gets to actual later drafts, no. I was then in my room, which I've kind of made into a Q garden by that point. But then whenever I wanted to work deeply on a character or I had issues with a particular scene, then I would go back to the location.
When you were writing your book tour, did you outline it first, or was this a very organic thing for you?
It did get outlined. It did start off organic with these different fragments coming together and then developing the characters and writing notes about those characters and maybe little fragments of scenes. And then I do plot out. I have a whole notice board full of post-its, and I kind of do my whole three-act structure and plan it all out. Then I go into the first draft with both the fragments and the post-its. And then it all changes, of course. The story starts leading you in different directions and the post-its get moved around and changed.
So interesting, you said your three-act structure. So your life as a writer and choreographer and dancer, all of those things contributed, it sounds like, to your writing process.
I think so, very much. I mean, the three-act structure I've taken more from learning about screenwriting, trying to see where, you know, the arc is and where the climaxes are, where the turning points are. With dance, I think I'm really aware of rhythm. There's something about the rhythm of language that I love, and I work very hard to get that flowing. And then with the acting in the theatre, I think is really helpful in terms of character development. And, you know, as an actor, you learn all this kind of method acting about what does my character want and what's in my character's way and what does my character fear. So all of those things have fed into my writing for sure.
Do you keep a character Bible?
Bible as in, you know, what do they eat and what do they
Yes, you're a detailed description of your characters. And if you do, does it help you?
I do it, and that some of it helps and some of it doesn't, I find. I've started to go off them. I used to do them religiously. And now I'm starting to discover if I focus more on the relationships between characters, the character organically becomes fuller. How do people respond and interact with each other? How they act differently depending who they're with. So I'm finding that's really interesting at the moment, is how do I develop characters in relationship to each other rather than what's their favourite colour, what's their favourite film. Although sometimes that can be useful and can create a whole avenue that's really interesting to explore and becomes a major plot thing. So you never know.
So you have these two other books that are in the drawer. One you're hoping to get cleaned up enough and redo it a little bit. What have you learned after 1,000 Paper Birds that you didn't know when you started books one and book two?
Less is more, probably.
Yeah.
Less is
more. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, it's really important. How about your dialogue? You said that you like the rhythm and flow of dialogue. I do, too. I think that that either stops or starts a story easily. It either propels it forward in a lovely way, or it's a speed bump. So do you ever read your dialogue out loud? Is it important for you to hear the words?
Yeah, I read every single word out loud, whether it's dialogue or description. Every gets read out 1,000 times.
How lovely. That's wonderful. Can you give us you've gotten great reviews on this book. I wrote a review on our website on this book because I loved it so much. I just thought it was such a lovely, lovely character study, and this story is so delicate in a way that the story doesn't feel shoved in my face. I hope you take that with my good intentions. It peels like maybe a flower opening. Maybe that's the better way to describe it, considering the setting. And I felt very tranquil after I finished reading that book. I felt very peaceful. It was just a beautifully woven story. So, from a big reader, I want to thank you for that. Can you share a little bit about what you're writing about now?
Well, I'm right in the thick of draft two at the moment. But in a way, it's got similarities. It's still got a very strong location. Instead of it being Kew Gardens, it's this island, this real island called Burr Island off the coast of Devon. Which has got this Art Deco hotel on it that was built in 1929. So it's this very strange little place that I used to have summer holidays there, so it's a place very close to my heart. So that's one of the main locations. And instead of the craft being origami, the main character is a shoemaker. And it's about forgiveness and compassion. There's bits of the Icarus myth in there. All kinds of things. I'm having a lot of fun with it. And, of course, there's love in it as well. I think I'd always write some kind of love story.
How wonderful. Tor, when you're writing, and this sounds, you're such a creative person, and I can just listening to you, I can hear almost the wistfulness in your voice when you talk about it. The locations are very personal to you, and so... Mm. That's lovely because it's a real emotion that you're pouring into your paper. What do you want people to walk away with after they read your books?
A sense of wonder, really. A sense of appreciating the moments we have and slight sense of mystery if none of us really know what happens next or what's really happening here. Just keep our eyes open, really, and to be grateful and appreciate what we have.
You're very connected to the earth. Is that true?
Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. If my children are screaming at me, I might not be. But yes. Nature is very important to me, yes.
I'm thinking about what you said about your kids. That's so funny. Do your children understand what mummy does?
My daughter does. She's just about to turn 9, and she does, and she's very proud of me. Although before I got published, she did say, "Oh, mummy, you've been writing this book all my life, and I've already written about 10 stories. Why are you taking so long?"
Gosh, isn't that when you say, I'm sure they were switched at birth at some point.
Yeah.
So, it's like, thank you so much, child, for that word of encouragement. You know, boy, nothing like a kid to smack you down to reality again.
Yeah.
Do you have an interest still in dance and theater? Or do you think that that's a little bit, you want to move to film?
I love dance. I whenever I go to see dance, it moves me in a way no other art form does. There's something about it that it manages to express what we can't say with words. And I think that will always be my challenge as a writer, is how do I capture that in words? You know, it's just that turn of a shoulder or that glance between two people that dance can express so immaculately.
Yes.
But I do also love film. I studied film for 3 years in Bristol, and I think it's a fascinating medium. Maybe at some point I will venture there a little bit.
Interesting. I think a profound statement that, you know, when you're talking about dance, you said the turn of a head or, you know, tip of a shoulder, whatever. And the audience reaction is immediate to dance. Mm. Are you on pins and needles waiting to hear reviews? Because book writing is not so immediate, is it?
No. I was very, very secretive about my writing for, you know, I was writing for 20 years and I hardly showed it to anybody, which I wouldn't encourage people to do. I think it's really good to share your work, but I was terrified, really terrified, and so didn't. And one of the most incredible things this year about being published is people reading it and coming back and telling me how much they were moved by it. And I've only just come to the realization that it really does need the reader to make a piece whole, that they breathe life into a story. And I've only just discovered that. Can you believe it?
Because your story is two-dimensional until someone takes it in and gives it life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, every time someone writes to me, the characters become a little bit more real and a little heavier and, you know, weightier. And the story becomes more real. So that's been a stunning experience for me, a real lesson. And in terms of reviews, I kind of, as a debut writer, I wasn't sure anyone was going to review it at all. So it's been a real thrill that, you know, such big papers here and have reviewed it. And a lot of bloggers have loved it, and that it was on a lot of kind of favorite books of the year last month, and that's just astounded me. It's been wonderful.
I think I'm very happy for your success with it. I read the book a while ago, I have to tell you, and I think about that book all the time. It is, you know, facing out on my bookcase with the thousands of other books, because there just are some books that I have to see. I have to see the book. And this is definitely one of them. I'm thrilled for you and your success. And I'm excited to know when your next book comes out. And so let's tell everyone where they can find you in social media, because I'm here in Southwest Florida at 74 degrees and you're in England in the evening, and I have no idea what the temperature is there.
It's freezing.
Yeah.
And it's dark.
We're supposed to get 31 degrees. Now, for Southwest Florida, people are saying, oh, poor baby, but, you know, that's cold for us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm born and raised in Miami. I'm not used to this kind of weather. I don't like it. I want 70 all the time.
Yeah.
Tell us where to find you, Tor.
On social media, I'm on Twitter, so that's just simply at Tor Udall for Twitter. And then Facebook, I have a Tor Udall author page.
Wonderful. It's fabulous. Before you go, would you like to do final five with me? It's 5 quick questions and 5 quick answers.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
Okay, we sometimes call it Stump the Author. So you said you're a reader and you always have been. So whose book is on your nightstand?
At the moment, I'm reading The Immortalists by Chloe Benjamin, coming out in May.
Yeah.
Wonderful book.
Yeah. It's fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Loving it.
And highly anticipated book, too. So I'm with you on that. So your first book has now been published, and you realize that you have this very valuable writer's toolbox. These are things that you unpack when you're writing or preparing to write. What, whether it's a virtual thing or a tangible thing, what is your most important tool as a writer?
Post-its.
I'm sorry?
Post-its. You know, sticky notes?
Post-its. Okay.
Post-its.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that. I have a lot of author friends who do that. They have this big board in front of them, and they actually use different color post-its, and they move them around, and they, you know, have characters coming together. It's an interesting. I like it. It's kind of like, you know, mad crazy storyboarding.
Yeah, exactly. For Thousand Paper Birds, I had to color code it with the characters to see, you know, if the characters had a kind of even amount of airtime. So it was really useful.
Fun. How much research do you do?
A lot. A lot of research. I can spend 3 months researching before I start writing.
Wow. What would we be surprised to learn about you? What's something you don't write in your bio that you can share?
Gosh, I can't think of anything. I don't know. I loved dancing in clubs in my 20s, and I married a DJ.
You married a DJ?
I married a DJ. Well, you know, as a dancer and a musician, it kind of works.
Absolutely. Okay, so my final question to you is, your two lovely children who just think you're probably nutso, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Ask me to help them write a book about you. What are we going to title it?
Oh. What would my children title the book about me?
Sure. What would we title a book about you? Just off the top of your head.
Well, they always say, I love you to the moon and back. So it'd probably
there you
be
go.
To the moon and back.
There you go. It's perfect for you. That is a perfect title. Tori Udall, I am thrilled that you came on Authors on the Air. You've written just an exceptionally beautiful book, and I wish you so much more success with your second book. Do you have a working title?
No, totally untitled at the moment, I'm afraid.
All right. And when should we expect to see untitled book number two?
Hopefully sometime next year. Towards the end of next year, maybe. Fingers crossed.
Fabulous. I love it. Well, most congratulations to you, and happy new year. Enjoy the writing process, and please come back when the next book is out.
I would love to, Pam. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been an absolute honor, Tor. Thank you so much for being with me, and good luck with the writing, okay? And that's our show for today, friends. I will be back later on at 7 with Meg Gardner, and then at 8:30 with Kristen Higgins. Have a great day, everyone, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Goodbye.